Hunted by the Kraken, the sinister leader of the Rule Empire, Beverly Jordan must control her powers, known only as the Priori, to survive. Believing her powers fit only for destruction and ruin, Beverly and her brother Charlie set off on a journey to find the fabled haven of Kriana, an underwater world where one can learn to split the fabric of time and manipulate the lines of power, where winged alequines soar through the air and the shadows lurk in waiting for someone to release them. Will Beverly escape the grasping clutches of the Kraken? Or is she destined to become his weapon? Chapter 18, Circle of Magic. I floated, weightless in an endless black expanse, devoid of all sound. The only source of illumination in the void was bubbles of light drifting in random motions. One collided with my bodiless spirit, enveloping me in its cold embrace. Black coalesced into a clearing of green grass, where I no longer floated but stood on the edge, disorientated. The clearing was surrounded by rainforest. Soft shafts of light escaped through the gaps between fronds and leaves, and a brook bubbled to one side. A group of individuals sat in a circle at the center of the clearing. Each sat on their own flat, low-lying stone, their faces creased with worry. Master Elitri, dirty and worn, occupied the stone closest to me. His face was etched with deep lines I had never noticed before. Enchanter Carter was there, as were three other important-looking men with tightly pinched faces. The Eternal Empress, who I had not seen since our encounter many months before, was seated to the right of the largest stone in the circle. This stone was raised higher than the rest, and was the only one unoccupied. A gentle undercurrent of magic pulled me across the clearing, to rest in the middle of the circle. By some twist of nature, I was able to see in all directions simultaneously. The group looked through me like I was empty space, a ghost in my own vision. Master Elitri broke the heavy silence.
So begins the next great meeting of the Circle of Magic, the gravest since we were driven under the sea by the Kraken 18 cycles ago.
It will not be the last for this cycle,
added the Empress.
No,
he conceded.
Recent events have made certain of that.
Recent events that some of us have not been privy to,
one of the men responded touchily.
Of course, Kane. That is why we are here,
the Master said, voice harsh.
Jayad will fill you in as it concerns his department,
he indicated with a wave to Enchanter Carter. The Enchanter inclined his head and sat up straighter to tell his tale.
Earlier this afternoon, agents reported strange vibrations in the lines on the surface. It was not overly worrying, but as a precaution, we suspended all day trips to the surface and advised caution. I can't believe we thought so little of it.
He paused, as if playing some horror out before his eyes.
There was a surge of energy through the lines of power. All viewing mirrors and spheres shattered. Not before we heard the screams of the agents above us as...
His voice cracked, dropping to an anguished whisper.
As the Kraken triggered his weapon again, drawing the magic and the life out of the agents and the people they were retrieving. Over 100 of our people now lie lifeless on the surface.
Tamika.
The name lodged in my throat.
Yes, Tamika,
repeated Enchanter Carter. I stifled my sob. He could hear me even though he could not see me. It appeared I was less invisible than I first thought. What would the penalty be for a stranger listening into the governing circle's session, even one who was not wholly there? Knowing the powerful presence of the Empress, it did not bear thinking.
My second in command,
Enchanter Carter continued.
Such a waste of life. She had insisted on going to the surface and I let her, never knowing.
Master Elitri took up the tale.
The magic gathered before reaching the Kraken and headed for the host its predecessor chose.
Beverly Jordan,
Kane stated grimly. I jerked at the sound of my name. My overlarge vision swirled, making me nauseous. Could you be nauseous without a body? I looked to Master Elitri, hoping he would deny it.
Yes. Unfortunately, she was at the hunt. The burst of magic collapsed the cavern roof over the plain between the academy and the forest. Half the contestants were thrown and buried under the rockfall. I'm afraid 12 hunters from the other cities didn't make it.
It was all I could do to bite back a cry. Were they dead? How many were alive but injured? For the first time, I wished I was a part of the circle, so I could ask questions and get the answers I needed.
And the girl?
Asked one of the other men.
Don't ask about me, ask about them.
I silently begged.
She was hit hard by the Priori and catapulted off her alaquine. She was buried,
Master Elitri said in a heavy voice.
We have to get her out,
stuttered Kane, eyes widened in terror.
She's the...
We all know what she is,
interrupted the master.
There was no need to fear. We got her out before she suffocated. Her leg will heal in time. I'm afraid that she is now even more powerful than she was and will need wards to keep her magic in check until she can control it.
Enchanter Carter asked,
Are wards necessary? What if we need...
Master Elitri cut him off.
Very necessary. Before now, her magic was leaking everywhere, tied to her emotions and lack of control. With this extra stock of inner magic, who knows how big or destructive the leaks will be? Cracked domes may be the least of our troubles.
Somehow, I could not believe it. I searched within myself, straining to feel some sense of a greater power, something more uncontrollable than the Priori I knew. But I felt nothing, saw nothing. How could I not tell that I had been leaking magic like a sieve? The thought called up a vision of the senior adepts who had fixed the hole in the dome, shading their eyes as they looked at me. Was that what they had seen?
The more pressing issue is how are we to protect her if the Kraken traced the magic?
Another man asked.
He was unable to before,
cut in Enchanter Carter.
There wasn't a massive hole in the ground before.
The man snapped back.
Was only there for 2 hours.
The Eternal Empress's powerful voice silenced the two men in an instant.
Her protection has been overseen by me before this incident, and I will continue to fulfill this role.
Be assured she is well guarded,
commented Master Elitri. The men looked unconvinced.
Do you doubt me?
Asked the Empress, her voice dangerous.
No, of course not.
Kane replied, suddenly intent on straightening his clothing.
Then there is no problem.
Her voice had returned to its mild manner. A pressure I had not noted before eased in the clearing.
However, for the sake of argument, what if we are found by the enemy?
We will do all we can. Watch and listen,
answered the third man.
Have the other hunters all been recovered alive?
Enchanter Carter gazed across the clearing and whispered,
My son, he was trying to reach Beverly. Half buried, he took a knock on the head. He has not woken.
Cypress!
Cried my mind. Tears trailed down my invisible face as I willed myself to leave. I didn't want to hear any more about the grief I had caused my friends by attracting the Priori. All those people whose stolen power I had inside me, including Tamika's, were dead in the Kraken's quest to find me. In my haste to leave the magic clearing, I ran straight into the unoccupied stone. A radiant light emanated from the rock. Master Elitri's head snapped up.
Beverly?
He called, incredulous, staring right into my eyes. I was wrenched backward and flung out of the vision. Pain flared in my leg as though it were on fire. I parted my cracked lips only to breathe in dust and foul air. Choking, I started to cough. Racking spasms coursed through my body. Too weak. I could not even lift my arms to clear the air with a line of power.
Help!
I rasped weakly.
Someone, please help!
The oxygen depleted with each breath. What if it wasn't true? How could I be here when I had heard Master Elitri say they got me out? Was the Circle of Magic a vision of the future? Or just some delusional dream? It was only hope that it was a future vision that kept me from gasping for air, though I've never seen the future before. I cursed, as more convulsions rippled through my body. It was then I realized that I was giving off a light blue glow. Gradually, I built up a dim awareness of the low cavern that had formed itself around my body, only 2 feet of moving space in each direction, all except my leg, which was buried under who knew how much weight. One thought overrode all others. I was not the only one trapped. Cypress and so many friends were also buried under the rockfall, all because of my magical magnetism. Straining to hear any hint of rescue, I heard an entirely unexpected sound. Growing louder and louder was the hum of water sliding through cracks in the rocks.
"It isn't enough that I'm suffocating,"
I thought.
"I have to die by drowning as well."
The fog in my head grew thicker. Fighting my drooping eyes, I was suddenly met with the sight of wet, navy blue ringlets and a lithe green body.
"Arabella?"
I attempted, but all I could manage was a choked and coughing gasp. Arabella looked over her watery shoulder.
"I found her."
The sound of running water retreated. The water sprite slid from a minute crack into the small space, curling her tiny form around my nose and mouth. The air was now free of dust, but the oxygen was still low. The absence of gritty powder allowed me to take smaller breaths without inhaling the local landscape. That was how they found me. The small cave I was buried in was blasted outwards. Master Elitri leant over me, his features blurry and indistinct. The pain in my leg took over as many hands appeared and lifted me out of my prison to lay me on a stretcher.
"You'll be fine. She'll be fine, right?"
The frantic voice of Charlie drifted down from above.
"Charlie, I need you to release more sprites,"
said Caleb, the postmaster.
"Yes, of course. I'll be right back, Bluebell. Just hold on,"
Charlie begged. In a daze, I was deposited into a bed and treated. A slow panic stirred inside me. What if this rescue was a dream as well? A distant voice urged me to drink a cup of liquid. All that remained was an endless maze of dreams melding together and forking in two and drifting without purpose, though none of the dreams had the clarity of the vision of the future I had experienced while buried alive. The swords rang together in a clash of sparks as I blocked Cypress's thrust. It was mid-afternoon in the Academy Gardens. The grass was soft and springy, and the flowers a riot of colour. It had taken a mere week for my injuries to heal. I suspected it had a lot to do with my newfound power. It made me feel dirty, to heal so easily when others had died. It had taken almost 3 weeks more for Cypress to fully heal enough to do sword practice. Charlie had been beside himself when he heard about Tamika.
"I thought I had you there,"
Cypress grunted as he lunged again. With a neat sidestep, I tried to strike from the side as he passed, twisting quickly. His blade struck mine, causing it to slide along the edge of his. I leapt back and stood at the ready, circling. I reveled in the simplicity of the activity, its complete lack of magic. Cypress's skill had improved immensely since I had first met him, and he was becoming a hard opponent to beat. In a quick, complicated spin, I flicked the sword from his hand and moved in to press the point of my sword into his neck. As fluid as a water sprite, he stepped to the side and with a sharp kick, knocked the sword out of my hand and into the air. He was after his own sword before I had time to blink. Catching my hilt, I brought it across my chest just in time to parry Cypress's swing. The swords crossed at chest height, my face just inches away from his. Intent on holding my stance, I looked up to find him smiling down on me, his soft breath blowing stray hair from my face. I frowned. What was he doing? And why did my heart feel like a flutterby flapping its wings to escape?
You have very pretty eyes,
he said, his eyes probing into the depths of mine. I blushed, swallowed, and stepped out of the sword lock. Cypress let his sword drop to his side.
Thank you,
I replied brusquely.
Your swordplay has improved.
Fumbling, I sheathed my sword and hoisted my satchel strap over my head. I had never had so much trouble putting it away before. A look, almost too quick to catch, flashed in his eyes before he reverted to his usual self, the teasing, quick-witted friend he had been all along. I sighed. Though I felt strangely let down, I was thankful the strange moment had passed. Too many things were complicated these days. I did not need one of my best friends to be one of them.
Maybe I'll beat you one day,
he suggested with a sly grin.
Never,
I replied, my laugh too jarring.
Do you want to test that tomorrow?
He challenged.
Be there or be square,
I replied, and turned towards the city. The yellow light of Vaux was shining dimly through the dome, overpowering Celt's red glow in the summer months. To fill in the silence, I said,
Setne and Charlie will be wondering why we're so late for dinner.
Let them wait,
he said lightly. I glanced at him, wondering if all those healing sessions had gone to his head, but he was looking away, his expression hidden.
I'll race you,
I said impulsively, and was off, sprinting across the grounds. Cypress's rapid footfall behind sounded in sync with the thump of my sword against my leg. That's right, Beverly, said a voice in my head. Run away from your problems.
Do not,
I argued heatedly. Just run and leave the world behind, the voice countered.
It's not like that,
I vowed to the voice.
Next time I won't run away. I'll take whatever comes.
We will see, mused the voice. We will see.
Hi everyone, thank you so much for joining us for episode 23 and chapter 18. I am joined today by the delightful Lois Spangler.
Hey.
Oh, Lois. And Sam Piaggio.
Hello.
So we're joined early by a small crew today. It is Kevin's birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Kevin. And it's a big one. We won't tell you which big one it is, but it's one of them. And Mr. Colin is moving house. And poor David is stuck at a job. You've got the small and interesting triad here.
Spoilers, I'm the small.
Okay, hang on.
So, guys, chapter 18, we left off at a bit of a cliffhanger last time, just been crushed by a whole cavern full of rock. What did you think of the continuation in this episode?
I mean, it was interesting. It's a bit more insight into what's actually happening to Beverly. She's got more power, but, like, it's sort of explaining how she got the power in the first place, in a way. Like, or at least where it's kind of come from. And that it's still happening is kind of interesting.
Mm.
But kind of sad, because we just met some people, and then those people are gone. And particularly because, like, Tamika had agreed to stay longer. I didn't get the chance to sort of get to the end, so I'm not entirely sure if we find out. But
yes, I'm sorry, Sam. Poor Tamika and the little boy that we met back in chapter 16, both of them are gone.
You had that moment of, like, when she, you know, gives them an extra few days, and then, well, maybe that wasn't the best call.
And, I mean, like, you don't get to see the blossoming relationship that was happening with Tamika and Charlie, and I'm just an asshole to my characters.
Well, that's your job. You're like, and everybody's so happy. It's like, yeah, but does something happen?
Yeah, you do kind of need to have that. I like that sort of uncertainty where you can have that whole thing. It's like, oh no, these people are pretty main characters. They're not going to go anywhere. And then it's like, psych.
That was exactly what I was doing. The ball of energy that hit Beverly in the last which was more priori, that hit Beverly in the last chapter, it's interesting that there was so much of it, that magic had regenerated so much in the past 16, yeah. 17 years, to the point that there was that much magic that was able to be created by the Kraken releasing his weapon again. And of course there's, you know, the high probability that the Kraken has used and tracked that energy to where she was. So now all of a sudden this safe haven is completely up in the air.
Yeah, it's interesting that idea that he can actually almost like watch where the magic drains and go, yeah. All right, that's the loop. That's the loop.
Beverly is the magic plug hole.
Yeah, he found, well, you know.
Yeah.
Still, you know, not good for anyone if he can sort of locate. Like, that's not good.
No. I think in this circle of magic, they're kind of putting on a little bit of a brave face, in a way, because they're really not sure what's going to happen. They kind of don't want to admit that shit's gone down. But it's interesting to hear that what we've been seeing emotionally from Beverly with her losing control, that that is actually being echoed in her magic, I suppose, vibrations, if you will, or leakages. Like, people have been able to see her lack of control.
So,
and then poor Cypress got stuck.
Yeah, he doesn't even get to, you know, witness a meeting to pass the time.
A future vision of a meeting.
Yeah. It's like watching TV, but...
yeah.
But you learn that you've killed all of your friends.
Well, she didn't do it. It's more that they have died, which is still bad. Still not great, but, you know.
And it's interesting to get that little tidbit that the Eternal Empress has been Beverly's protection since she got to Kriana, which kind of makes you think that Sheen is slightly like a spy, you know. Supposed to be an ally, but at the same time.
Well, it's almost, but it could also be like Shima's the link. Like, she's able to work through Shima to protect Beverly.
Yeah, that was always the impression I got, particularly watching how Shima was so deferential.
To the Empress?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, at the very, very start when they first meet her.
Yeah, they talk, and wasn't it, there's a bit of talk about duty and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
All coming full circle, tying up the loose ends.
As we hurtle towards the ultimate conclusion.
I suppose I wasn't a complete asshole to the characters in this one, because it ends on a slightly emotionally confusing, if slightly lighter note for this particular episode. Cypress and Beverly have a moment. Did we have a moment in the recording studio, Sam?
I can't remember, so... And by which I mean Sparks, just absolutely electric. It was just stunning.
We set things on fire. It was an accident. Colin was playing with matches. We took them off him.
Yeah. To be fair, like, this, it's a sort of a moment that has been sort of building for a bit. It's almost like they've tried to have that moment, but they kind of have to both have the moment at the same time.
Yeah,
it's always just been like one or the other up until this point.
And now it's kind of, they've almost had the moment at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it helps that, you know, they both nearly died.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of
puts a bit of perspective.
Puts a perspective. That's right.
Need to do this now.
Talking about perspective. So, Sam, you posted last week a photograph, a Facebook memory, as it was, of all of us in the studio recording priori, like originally recording all of the dialogue 2 freaking years ago.
Yeah.
We have not even finished the podcast, and it was 2 years ago we recorded.
I don't even think that was the first session either. Like,
if Kevin's not in it, then it was one of the later ones.
I think he might have been in it.
Then that was the first one.
Okay. But, yeah, it was like 2 years, and then you go,
I
suppose it was.
Because what we did was we actually pre-recorded everything, like all of the dialogue, And then we did it in, like, it would be like a couple of months, and then all of us would be able to find a time and we'd get together for a session. Then it would be like another couple of months, and then we'd be able to find a time to get together and do the session. And then the first half of last year was me editing all of those sessions into dialogue lines, and it took forever. Forever into individual dialogue lines, and then trying to make the dialogue lines sound better, and then poor David gets the really dodgily edited sound lines from Emily to then work into Kevin's narration.
Is Kevin still doing bits of the narration? Is that still, like, he sort of
So each every couple of weeks Kevin does the narration for the current episode.
Yeah.
That we have a chat about. So Kevin's been a bit of a slacker, has not done what we did, what we champions did, and recorded all of it at once.
That's right, kicking when he's not here.
Kicking on his birthday.
Yeah. It's not like there's that much more narration than there is dialogue. I mean, wait, hang on. That's not how that works.
Yes, but Priori listeners, we started this journey 2 years ago. It is a bizarre thing to think about. I believe that by the time we finish this podcast, we may have been running for about 12 months at that point. Dear listeners, there are only 5 more episodes after this. And then we're going to have to think about what we're going to podcast about, or if anyone even cares if we continue to podcast. I would hope someone would care.
You'll have to write the next book of Priori.
Except now you can just
write it straight away as a script.
That's right. Get rid of all this narration nonsense. Cut Kevin out of the deal. Speaking of Kevin, it is Kevin's birthday today, which is why he is not here. And so I would like to retrospectively take this opportunity to say happy birthday, Kevin. As a birthday present to Kevin, we could all talk about what is our favorite thing about Kevin. Lois, do you want to go first?
His generosity.
Damn it, that's what I was going to say.
Probably be a little...
Oh, no!
He does not have a closed setting. Like, he will, doesn't matter who you are, as long as being a jerk, he will gladly sit down and listen to you and be completely involved in what you're saying. And that kind of engagement is not that common anymore.
No, it's definitely not. How about you, Sam?
As I say, I was going to say something very similar, but I guess I'd build on that in, not only is he willing to sort of take the time to listen to you, but then he's very giving in his knowledge and experience. Like, he'll listen to you and then be like, here's the solution. And it can be a range of things. I've, you know, talked to him about trying to set up technical things for recording and stuff. And he was always, as Lois said, you know, not only very generous to take the time to listen to me, but then incredibly helpful. It was like, I have all these issues and they seem insurmountable. And he's like, well, here's the solution to all of your issues. And you're like, oh, well, that clears up everything. Oh, okay.
Hey. Should start his own problem-solving business.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite things about Kevin is his enthusiasm. He is so super-duper enthusiastic about everything.
Yeah, I can't really imagine Kevin being meh. I can't.
Yeah. Yeah, he's enthusiastic about projects. Every time you approach him to do something new, he's like, that sounds fantastic. And even just life in general, you tell him about, you know, things that you've been doing and he's so enthusiastic about that. He's so passionate about the things that he is doing. He is passionate about, you know, like little things like his little child baby. That sounds really unspecific and like I don't remember anything about his little child baby, but I can't remember whether or not he has mentioned said child baby on the podcast and whether or not he wants to keep details about said child baby private. So
The best thing to do is to sort of assume digital anonymity until told otherwise. So there is a small human involved.
That's right. And small humans can be difficult. But despite difficulties, just enthusiastic about all things in life. And I have to say that, like, Kevin is the work ethic of Lois, Sam, and myself combined. I'm not quite sure how he sleeps.
Yeah. No, I suspect there may be something involved, but I haven't been able to verify it.
Oh dear. Yeah, I call vampire or other type of creature which does not require sleep.
Makes sense. It's the only explanation.
Yeah, of course.
Or robot.
Yeah, okay.
Although I have to say that he is one of the most unrobotic people ever, so it's not personal.
He's a really good
Android
robot.
Android Kevin runs on bourbon.
Really good whiskey.
But he's very fuel efficient because I've seen him make a highball, like just, you know, like a finger of bourbon last an entire evening. So.
Wow, that's impressive. Some would say un-Australian, but I say impressive.
No. You can make yourself rollicking drunk takes no talent whatsoever, but it does take an enormous bladder to actually enjoy alcohol. My mom has a wonderful story. She grew up with five other sisters in Mexico City in a sort of traditional 40s, 50s, 60s household. And her parents would sometimes go out, you know, on trips to Europe, and the kids would be the ones left in the house. But two of the older daughters, decide to sit down and get drunk on something called Gawama, which is I don't even know if the beer exists anymore, but it was more than alcohol. And they thought they were going to get rip-roaring drunk, but all they did was go up to the bathroom every 5 minutes.
Young experiments in drunkenness.
Yeah.
I remember those.
And then you weren't doing it right.
Yeah.
So, I think that tonight's Kraken Goodreads, which will be read post-production by Colin, but I have an idea for Kraken Goodreads theme tune this week, which is in honour of Kevin's birthday. And you guys can feel free to join in whenever you feel confident enough that you know the tune. Crackin' Goodreads, crackin' Goodreads, crackin' Goodreads, crackin' Goodreads, crackin' Goodreads, crackin' Goodreads, crackin' Goodreads. So happy birthday, Kevin and Crackin' Goodreads. And here now is Colin to read a birthday-related Crackin' Goodreads that we will conspicuously not comment on because we don't currently know what it is.
We know we're going to love it.
That's right.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Well, it's time to celebrate your birthday. It happens every year. We'll eat a lot of broccoli and drink a lot of beer. You should be good and happy that there's something you can eat. A million people every day are starving in the street. Your daddy's in the gutter with the wretched and the poor. Your mama's in the kitchen with a can of Cycle 4. There's garbage in the water. There's poison in the sky. I guess it won't be long before we're all gonna die. Well, what's the matter, little friend? You think this party's the pits. Enjoy it while you can. We'll soon be blown to bits. The monkeys in the Pentagon are gonna cook our goose. Their fingers on the button, all they need is an excuse. It doesn't take a military genius to see we'll all be crispy critters after World War III. There's nowhere you can run to, nowhere you can hide. When they drop the big one, we'll all get fried. Well, there's a punk in the alley, and he's looking for a fight. There's an Arab on the corner buying everything in sight. There's a mother in the ghetto with another mouth to feed. Seems that everywhere you look today, there's misery and greed.
I guess you know the Earth is going to crash into the sun, but that's no reason why we shouldn't have a little fun. So if you think it's scary, if it's more than you can take, just blow out the candles and have a piece of cake.
Thanks very much, Cole, for that delightful crack and good reads. I am laughing very hard on the inside.
It was definitely amazing.
So this episode is probably going to be a little bit short because, again, we don't have everybody else making us run overtime. Because clearly we are the timekeepers of this little patch.
Challenge accepted.
But I thought that maybe we could end this particular podcast off with a little bit of an update on what everybody's up to. What are you creating? What are the things that you've been doing recently? Sam?
So this weekend, I'm actually going to go to a viewing for the film I did. I had a small role in.
Yay! Was this the short film that we talked about last year?
No, this is the I think it's a feature. I think it's feature length. But I was only very, very briefly involved because my character is only ever in the sound booth of this theater. So I only turned up to film on like the second last day of filming. And then just did all of my scenes in one go on my own. And then, except for like the one scene where I talked to another character, we said, did that one, that character left. And it was his last, like the actor's last scene. So he finished and left. And then we just finished the night with knocking out each of my scenes and all of my like reaction shots. And then I went home and that was the only filming I did, even though they've been filming for like 2 months like a month or however long it was.
Wow, awesome.
So that's, so they're actually, the guy who directed it and sort of, and wrote it and all the rest of that, and he's obviously been editing it and all the rest of it, but he wanted to do a showing for the cast and crew, so he's finally sort of arranged that, and that's going to be this weekend, and so my brother and I are going to go see that.
So how was it reacting to something that you weren't actually seeing?
So the two things I was concerned about is, one, I had to actually look like I knew what I was doing inside a sound booth. which the other thing I pointed out is like, there's no...
Kevin, where are you?
Well, it's not even that. It's just sort of like I've done plenty of theatre and I've worked as crew, but I haven't specifically worked in lighting or sound. I've done more stage managing and directing. Some of the stuff I've seen, like, it's more just sort of pressing the button to go to the next queue. But obviously in our film, a whole bunch of stuff's going wrong, and so I'm having to do more things. But also the fact that it would never just be one person. Like, that's a bit of sort of like, you know, suspension of disbelief kind of thing, that there's this one guy doing both sound and lighting. So I'm, like, trying to make it look like that would be a possible thing. And the other one is this guy's supposed to be smoking a whole bunch, and I don't smoke.
Oh, dear.
And the last time I had to do smoke as a character was for a play I was doing, which was the a Dusty Springfield musical. And I at one point played this, it was like an American producer, and I'm just like that sort of like angry, smoking, chain-smoking kind of thing. And it was just for one scene, and I'd been doing, like I had a fake cigarette and all this other stuff, and we did the preview before we finally... which to do the show, and one of the pieces of feedback I got from the audience was that during that scene, everything was great, it was fine, until I put the cigarette in my mouth, and then it was just painfully obvious I'd never smoked in my life. And so so it was just like, just don't put it in your mouth, just hold it. And like every time you go to put it in your mouth, just yell at her again. And so that was fine. So I'm interested to see how it all looks. Everyone else was happy with it. It's more just my own paranoia about my own and distaste at my own work. That like it's well, like it's just like
the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, it's the imposter thing, but it's also just like watching myself. And it's when it's watching me, it's much. It's very easy just to sort of immediately pick out flaws, which like either aren't actually that important or aren't actually that obvious to anyone else. And so you're watching it and you're getting like the worst possible viewing of what you've done by watching it for me when I watch it. So that's going to be fun.
Nice. And what's thing two?
Well, the thing two is the one that I was like hoping that we would actually have the podcast out by, because on April 2nd, I'm taking part in this charity production. It's the 24-hour musical. So
that sounds fun.
And it's some friends of mine are sort of organizing it and sort of spearheading it. And so they called me up and said they wanted me to audition for it. But the way it's working is I have no idea what show it is. I have zero idea. A couple of days from now, 10 days out, they're going to announce 10 shows. And then every day leading up to it, they're going to remove one show from that list. And then basically we start rehearsals Saturday afternoon, like early Saturday afternoon, and we put on the show Sunday night.
Wow.
So we have, you know, as the name suggests, we're going to have 24 hours to prepare and then put on a show. I have a role, and I believe the people organizing it know what role they want me for, but we don't, like, none of the cast know what show we're doing and won't know until we find out basically the same time everyone else finds out, like, which will be the Saturday of when we're actually starting. But so they asked for me to nominate a charity, and I didn't really think of anything off the top of my head, but I believe there's going to still be a collection of charities, and then whatever money we make from, like, ticket sales and the rest of it, all of that just goes straight to the charities.
Yeah, I found the website. It's 24-hour musical with no spaces and 24 being numerals.
Yeah.
So it's 24hourmusical.wordpress.com.
Excellent. That is the one. So if you're interested, I believe tickets are available now. I believe they're $24. I think that's the price, $24 for tickets. And that's a flat price for everyone.
Will the feature film go out to the public?
I don't know what their plans are. I believe they're actually currently looking to ship it to various festivals, which, depending on the festivals, will restrict how they can release it. So some festivals, it's like if you're in the festival, you can't do anything with it until after the festival. And things like that, because they want, if people want to see the film, to come to the festival.
Yeah. So we'll let people know when we find out.
If I find out that there's a way for people to go see it, I'll definitely let you know. But until then,
hold tight.
Yeah, just sort of. I think there's a trailer.
Sweet, we'll put a link to it.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the
doobly-doo.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes.
How about you, Lois?
Well, right now, if we're talking about 2 weeks from now. Literally 2 weeks from now. It will be the day after the end of Contact 2016, which is Australia's national specific convention. It's the first time it's happening in Brisbane in about 10 years, and I'm on the volunteer staff. And, of course, you know, we're ramping up for the event, and I'm suffering con brain.
And it looks like a pretty awesome con as well. It's run over the Easter weekend, and there are some fun time authors coming along. Ben Aronovich with his Rivers of London.
Yeah.
And
We're quite pleased with that. We've got Jill Pentozzi coming over as well. And we've got some fabulous Australian authors too. And
Lois is giving a panel. Well, not giving a panel, giving a workshop.
No, we've had to postpone the workshop. There were some time that we could not solve. We just couldn't solve them and still have either a particular panel or the workshop at the con. So what we decided was we'll just save the workshop for a few months after the convention, and that way I can actually run either a proper half day or I can run a full day workshop.
Well, that means I can come.
Yeah, right? So it's more than likely going to be about world building for interactive narrative.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Excitement. For those of you who may have forgotten, Lois is a very wonderful interactive designer person doing her PhD, her doctorate thingy. Said related activities.
Yeah, now hyped me up to somehow live up to that.
Lois. Live up and exceed.
Yeah, I like making stuff up, and I prefer to make stuff up with people. So I've managed to convince a university that's studying how this can happen and applying some literature theories from the turn of the 20th century to sort of see what we can reveal if we cross that with interactive narrative. They thought it was a pretty good idea, and they're letting me do stuff.
They let you do stuff, and then the contact people are like, that sounds like a great idea. Do us a workshop. Be on our volunteer committee.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Yeah. If there are any other doctor or PhD students out there listening right now, if you're in the middle of either your coursework or your research, and the loveliest people approach you and say, hey, we really like what you're doing. We really think you're amazing. Would you like to be a volunteer to be sort of on the founding committee of this particular convention? Thank them profusely, but say no. I do not regret working on contact, but oh, my already very weak skills of time management have been stretched to nabbing point.
I'm sorry, Lois, I shouldn't be laughing. That's very hugs. All the hugs. It'll be over in 2 weeks, though, and you shall have the rest of your year, unless we succeed in this grant application we're putting in together, in which case I will then monopolize the rest of your year. Sorry. In terms of stuff that I have been up to, being the start of the year I find as a freelancer is always difficult because you are finalizing projects from the last year and then attempting to get projects for the new year. So no money is coming in, but lots of work is going out.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I have done is that as well as writing fantasy novels, I also write a series of contemporary comedy novels called The Grand Adventures of Madeline Kane. And these novels are written as though you're reading the main character Madeline Kane's Facebook page. So everything is told in status updates and private messages and Facebook notes. And
it's the modern epistolary novel, really.
Exactly. You know, if you think back to, 20 years ago when people were writing stories of, people writing letters back and forth to each other the old snail mail way, this is the much more contemporary version of that. And if you like the jokes and humour that are in the Priori podcast chats, potentially you will enjoy this book series. But I recently,
if you've been looking for a good, fun madcap adventure kind of book, yeah, that's what you
we're all want about the madcap adventures. there were two books in the series, but I recently wrote a novella to go at the front of the series as a kind of a lead into the series, and I've put it out for free. So So if you are interested in like, how the hell can someone do Facebook in a novel that just sounds weird, or is Emily actually funny, or will I enjoy reading Emily's work rather than listening to her beautiful voice, you can test all of these things by downloading Madeline Kane, The Adventure Begins, which is just a short novella, should only take you an afternoon to read. Oh, well, that's if you read at the speed that I do. But it's free on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, all of those fun things. And if you are a person who likes print copies, it is also available in that format. However, you must pay for that one. Sorry.
Yes, you must sacrifice plastic or perhaps bits and bytes for trees that gave their lives.
That's right. That's exactly right. And if you get a copy of the novella, please, pretty please, review it. If you don't like it, just don't tell me you've reviewed it.
Review it regardless.
But review it regardless. I don't want to skew anybody's reviews. But I will say that if you get the novella, it does let you know about how you can get the rest of the series more cheaply. So there you go. There's an incentive for getting the novella.
Yay.
What are you are you laughing at, Sam?
Sorry, it was the way you said it. You were like, I don't want to influence anyone's reviews, but I will tell you that. And I was just like, I was trying really hard not to laugh, and I didn't do a very good job.
And as Kevin said last week, remember, the more stars you give us, the more exercise you've done. So it's the same with the Madeleine Kane film. So that's the, I suppose, to me, the only significant thing that's happened so far this year, other than of course, restarting the Priori podcast.
Sorry, I'm distracted by Odin, who's just, he's being a cuddlebug. And when I stop patting him to use the mouth, he then reaches over and with the teeny-weeny claw just gently taps me on the leg, going like, no, I need more pets, please. More pets, please.
That's a really wonderful image if you don't have context.
It is, isn't it?
This large Norse man. Lying on the bed being like, Hans! Oh, old father.
All right, just a few minutes, then I have to go to bed, okay?
On that note, I feel like that's a brilliant note to go into the gag reel for this particular scene. And as with several of the scenes near the end, the majority of the gag reel is made up from the chats, because we were just getting too efficient in the last chapters when we were recording dialogue.
We'll never do it again.
Yeah, I think we're coming up against a deadline. We can't goof around anymore. We have the time.
Emily's with a whip just being like, stop making mistakes! Sorry, that was a bad image. Let's go back to the north. All right, guys. Have a wonderful fortnight, and we will see you again for episode 24.
Bye!
Bye!
I called it. And by called it, I mean I'd never actually said anything to anyone. But yes! Elitry. Hang on. Elitry. Elitry. It's Elitry. Oh, man.
And we'll need wards to keep her magic in check until she can control it.
Yeah, there you go. Liam Neeson. That'd be fun.
Bong.
Someone gets to be Kane. He's a bit of a pompous politician.
I'm already doing that.
Sam.
A bit more. That's weird.
Recent events that some of us have not been privy to. Get off, Malone!
Kane speaks. Stop speaking. It's not because he's not there. He's just died.
Yep. Clear! You back, Kane?
You're a wizard, Harry.
Sorry.
Damn it, Kane. It's not my name, and I know I'm a wizard.
You're a wizard, Harry.
No.
Sorry,
I didn't mind. I had a heart attack.
Dun, dun, dun. Is this sort of like a flashback?
No.
A sword fight. I get it. Sword.
So I'm arguing with a voice in my head. Okay. Scared of all the love. Scared of all the love.
Where is the love?
Stop running away from your feelings.
I'm being rude.
You're politely being rude. Wait.
I was politely being rude.
Sounds like the perfect storm.
Yeah, but I think that it's
perhaps you can auto-tune at least one of us. I have shouting along to the radio in the car. That's what I got.
And I've got the M&Ms that I just ate half an hour ago voice. Pause. Beep. Cue for Colin.
Yeah, we probably should have, cleared it with him first.
Hope you're having a great day.
Priori the Podcast is a full cast audio of the fantasy novel Priori, written by Emily Craven, the author of the Grand Adventures of Madeleine Kane series. The podcast is produced by Emily Craven and Kevin Powell, and contains the voiceover talents of Emily, Kevin, Sam Piaggio, Colin Smith, and Lois Spangler. Intro and outro music is thanks to composer Christopher Healy. Our audio intern is the amazing David Fithian. Each weekly episode contains a chapter of Priori, as well as a gag reel and chat with the cast. To find out more about Priori, Emily, the cast, or to sign up to the newsletter of Awesome, go to www.originalfantasy.com/Priori podcast. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please consider while you're at the website donating the price of a cup of coffee towards us paying our wonderful voiceover actors. These guys have freely donated their time for this project, and Emily would like to shower them with riches so they'll consider creating more podcasts with her and for you in the future.